Well, the first person in the U.S. diagnosed with the coronavirus is being treated with the help of a robot. To learn more, we're joined on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Mark Schleiss, University of Minnesota Medical School Director of Pediatric and Infectious Diseases. Doctor, thanks for the time. How often are you using robots? And in a situation like that, if I was the patient, I wasn't sure if I would be worried because doctors don't want to talk to be in contact.
Well, I mean, this is a great question, and I think the point to emphasize is the patient's not being treated by a robot. The patient's being treated by doctors who are using robotics and artificial intelligence to promote better infection control and help optimize treatment of the patient. You know, this has been a quiet revolution in medicine for the last 10 years or so. I think we have to look to the Ebola epidemic some years ago as sort of the trigger point for the development of robotics for infection control. What we learned from the Ebola crisis is that you can train healthcare workers again and again and again and again about using proper techniques to avoid contamination or infection, and people make mistakes. And so robotics here has been a real a valuable addition to our armamentarium, and it's not just treatment of infections, it's surgery, it's other applications, therapy. And so there's a quiet revolution of robotics going on in medicine today.
Well, we've heard about robotics in surgery, but it seems like the area that was kind of eye-popping here was that it was being used in a hospital room, you know, for treatment, continuing treatment of a patient. So get specific, if you would. What sorts of things are being done by machines that might have been done by a person 5 or 10 years ago?
One of the big benefits is video. And so having robotics to create a video interface where a clinician can look at the rash, look at the patient's extremities, look at the joints, look at the throat, look at the eyes. And so robotics can allow us to really extend our physical exam. This is being used in telemedicine as well. Here in Minnesota, we have a lot of very rural areas where acquisition and access to healthcare providers may be limited. So robotics can be very valuable as an extension of the physical exam. It can be very valuable in gathering vital signs, even extending into things like phlebotomy and other kinds of simple interventions. And, of course, we know that even more sophisticated interventions by way of robotic surgery are becoming commonplace now in many hospitals. But these are some of the benefits and some of the tangible improvements in care. And again, I would reiterate the importance of using robotic technology in preventing accidents, preventing contamination, and preventing exposure to healthcare providers of very dangerous pathogens like Ebola or coronavirus.
How do patients feel about it? I mean, you don't have to deal with the bedside manner.
Well, yes, this is a key point, isn't it? And so I think that as we look to the future of artificial intelligence and robotics and medicine, we have to remember the human element. And we have to talk to our patients and find ways to reassure them that these technologies are not replacing the doctor-patient relationship, but augmenting and improving it. And so I think we need to be very cognizant of that. And I think we need to gather data from patients after they've undergone these experiences, focus groups and interviews, to ask them how they feel about it, just as you suggest, and learn from that and take that information to improve our interactions in the future.
You know, there's a difference, and before we let you go, health groups like Kaiser, for example, are famous now for using video links, iPhone connections, send a photo of that rash or, you know, whatever, versus the situation where a patient is captive, you know, in a hospital room. So how is that factored into the way these are deployed?
Well, I think that the idea of a patient being, you know, as you put it, captive, I mean, ultimately, it's really an issue of safety, and it's really an issue of professional responsibility to not let the hospital become the vehicle for dissemination and spread of infection. We've dealt with this problem for decades with resistant bacteria that are acquired during hospitalization. We know that the hospital can be a hazardous place, and you can acquire resistant organisms that are refractory to antibiotics, even untreatable pathogens. And so the coronavirus is really, I think, analogous to that. It's a situation where you really need to protect other patients and protect the facility, because after all, if a disaster happens related to infection control in the hospital, then it hurts all of us and it hurts our community, because we may need that facility someday ourselves. And so this is really an investment in the greater community good.
Thanks for your time this morning. Dr. Mark Schleiss is the Director of Pediatric and Infectious Diseases at the University of Minnesota Medical School.